Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. Some of the many services we offer include nursing and social work services. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Lowe's. We are having a wonderful, wonderful conversation with Oscar Michelin. First, we talked about his family coming over many years ago as immigrants and where the whole family has gone since then. And they have made major contributions to the city. Then his career with Cuomo LLC and what he's doing very specifically for the small businesses. And now this part is just staggering. Oscar has helped exonerate seven men from various different separate murder cases. And his work has actually been a movie with Netflix, which is Fight for Justice, David and Me, and a podcast, Empire on Blood. And we got from the beginning of the show how Oscar's dad was a very altruistic, loving person and did things for the community. And obviously, you know, like father, like son. And Oscar, this is just amazing. We're back now with Oscar Michelin. And here's where we're going. I know you have questions, but I'm at a loss for words because this is just so amazing.
I'm actually, I just have a philosophical statement to make, all right? I really respect him for doing what he's doing. I have never been in jail, but I have had to visit a few times. And I didn't even like that. All right. So I can only imagine if you're sitting in jail for 20 years, 30 years, or maybe the rest of your life, and you were not guilty, what that has to be like. That has to be hell on earth. You know, really. I just can't imagine it.
I said something at the break, and I mean it very sincerely. Most people listening know I have cancer. It's taken 2.5 years from my life away. Here you have somebody who's healthy and vibrant. And in a cell for 20 plus years, I have no idea. I know the pain I go through in my head sometimes. I have no idea what that poor person is going through. Oscar, we're turning it over to you. First of all, how'd you get involved in anything like this?
So yeah, thank you. It's obviously, it's very frustrating and rewarding work at various times, depending on which stage of a particular case you get me on. Back in the early 90s, and into the 2000s, I did a lot of criminal defense. That was where I learned how to litigate. And the administrative judge of the County of Queens, a guy named Stephen Fisher, reached out to one of my associates, happened to be in the hallway, and said, could you have Mr. Michelin look into this case of Angelo Martinez? The DA thinks he might be wrongfully convicted. He's been writing letters, and he needs a lawyer, you know, pro bono. And I was like, who is this judge that wants me to, you know, do pro bono work? I'm trying to build a business, you know. And I got involved in that case. And Angela went in at 18. He'd been incarcerated for 19 years. And through a long story short, we established that the real killer was actually a Russian hitman for the Russian mob. And we vacated his conviction and we got him out after 19 years. So once that happened, I got a flood of letters. You know, it was in the paper. This was pre really the popularity of the internet. It was out there, but not as popular as it is now. And then I started going through these cases and I started picking cases that stood out to me as being wrongful convictions. And the one thing about COVID is it's let me get through. I had 150 pending requests for help and we were able to answer everybody during the COVID pandemic to tell them, you know, we'll get to you when we can, or no, we don't think that's the kind of case that we can get involved in. You know, we generally look for, it has to be a murder case normally. There's no death row in New York, but you get life in prison, which means you're going to die in jail. So it's a different form of death row. And we also have to see that you have a family member on the outside. You know, if nobody believes in you, why are we going to believe in you? So we want to have an outside contact. We then want to see what the path is You know, why do you think you could prove your wrongful conviction? We get lots of letters that say, I'm innocent, you got to help me. You know what? That doesn't go anywhere. You know, really tell me, there's a witness, you know, who was never interviewed, or this material was never examined. When we get, we don't do DNA cases. So when we get a request that has a DNA case, we refer that to the Innocence Project, which only does DNA. They don't generally do reinvestigation. So our cases are very difficult because, first of all, I do it kind of on the side. You know, I'm the only one in the firm who does it. I don't use any of the office staff for it. I do everything, you know, myself, with if I hire an investigator perhaps, but the legal work and everything else is done by me, nights, weekends, or, you know, spare time type of thing. And to go back and look at a 20-year-old case, witnesses are dead. The thing about these neighborhoods, right? They don't normally, it's not normally, you know, Beverly Hills and Fifth Avenue that you're talking about. You're talking about poor neighborhoods that were crime ridden. And so many times the witnesses you're looking for are gone. The evidence is gone. The neighborhood may have changed. So it's very, very difficult to establish that someone's innocent from 20 plus years ago. Particularly where you don't have the internet, that social media say, and people weren't taking pictures of themselves every, you know, 5 seconds. So there just isn't a lot of evidence out there. So it's really difficult. For example, the average length of time on the cases that I work on is 5 years, you know, so it's not like someone calls me or send the letter and then the next year they get out. The average, it's taken as long as 10 years on some. The least has been 3, and the average is about 5 years of reinvestigation. And many times it ends up being luck. You know, the last case that we worked on, we were looking for a guy, this is like out of a movie, with one eye. You know, at that time, there was a report that in addition to the one witness on the case, there was a guy with one eye from the neighborhood. And people knew him. He was kind of like a character from the neighborhood. But he was a transient. No one could find the guy. Ended up, he had moved to Massachusetts. So we did not know this because the real killers had intimidated him, burned his arm with a cigarette, and told him to get the F out of the Bronx. And so he left. That's why we couldn't find the, you know, this guy. Guy is shopping on Fordham Road. And lo and behold, a friend of the defendant finds the one-eyed man in the store and says, we've been looking for you for literally 20 years. And the guy says, what are you talking about? And he said, well, my friend has been incarcerated for that murder. He said, what? I went to court to try to tell the cops that I knew who did it. And afterwards, I got that's how we found that he'd been intimidated. So we found him. He gave a statement. We showed it to the Bronx DA's office, and they agreed to reinvestigate the case. When the Bronx DA's office opened the file to look at the case, they found that grand jury testimony had been withheld from the defense, and it was the victim's dying words to the woman who was holding him while he died after he shot. She said, what happened? Who did this to you? He said, it was a Spanish guy. Our client was an African-American black. When he was arrested, our client's statement to the police 22 years ago was, you know, some Spanish guy shot him, and to give a description. We had a 911 call back then that said the shooter is a Hispanic male. The judge did not let that call into evidence. And then we find the one-eyed witness. He tells us, he gives us the description of this Hispanic male. And lo and behold, there's this grand jury testimony that shows the DA knew that the victim's dying words were, it was a Spanish male. In addition, we found another document from a caller, a guy named Mr. Rivera, who was the police took a canvas, so they go to, you know, the apartment building in front of where the shooting occurred. And he said, I saw this Spanish male pull a gun and shoot this guy. When we went back to him, when they went back to re-interview him, now that we found it, he said, I never said that to the police. I don't remember. He didn't want to get involved. But so there was all this evidence at the time pointing to the fact that our client wasn't the shooter. So, you know, that was pure luck. Literally, you know, just right place at the right time, running into this guy who had come back. His daughter had never left the Bronx. At that time, his daughter was one. And he left. He left her with his, you know, baby's mother, and he got the heck out of the Bronx. He came back to visit her. She was now grown. And he said, oh, let me go on Fordham Road, do some shopping. And, you know, if he decided to go into Starbucks instead or something, Mr. Larry McKee would still be in jail. So, you know, there's a number of causes for wrongful conviction. But overturning wrongful conviction on reinvestigation, oftentimes you really need the hand of God there to just be lucky for you and find what you think you're looking for.
How does a district attorney live with that with good conscience, knowing that? I mean, how can you be like that as a human being if you think about it?
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible.
Well, especially when you know the New York State prison system, like you said, Otto, I couldn't do 20 days in New York State prison system for a crime that I did commit. I would not survive. It is a horrible place to be. All this false imagery that somehow our prisoners are up, you know, have their feet up on couches and they're watching TV and playing bingo is nonsense. Well, for example, right now, I don't know if you know this, New York State inmates get one mask per week and they are told to wash it and reuse it. Okay. There's no social isolation and COVID is raging through the prison system. But beyond that, even in healthy times, it's just a miserable place. There's no medical care, gangs, the correction officers, some of them are helping the sale of drugs and other things, you know, and gang operations in New York State prisons. So one of the things that I found in all my guys, I don't know how they do it, but they always isolate themselves in prison. Every single one of my exonerees spent all their time in the law library. They just lived there working their cases and stayed out of trouble as much as possible. And that's always a sign too, when I try to decide like which case should I get involved in, all of them have filed motion after motion. The one that I'm currently working on, Andre Brown, also in the Bronx. Matter of fact, in my old neighborhood in the Bronx, Andre and I went to the same high school, different years. He's a little younger than me. Andre, I know you're not going to believe this. Andre wrote 1,100 letters for help. Wow. Okay, 1,100. He numbered them. And one of the guys that I exonerated, a guy named Calvin Buari, also from the Bronx, also from my old neighborhood, when he got out, the first thing he said to me was, you got to look at, he goes, I don't care what else you're working on. You got to work on my man, Andre Brown's case. You know, he's innocent. You know, we've been in the law library working. You got to work on his case. And Andre wrote me, and where the judge granted us a hearing. We were supposed to have the hearing, the first, week in, I'm sorry, the last week of March, and of course COVID hit. So now we're waiting for that opportunity. But again, I wouldn't have gotten involved in Andre's case if he didn't happen to be a law library buddy with Calvin. Right. And I'm talking about the same day that I got Calvin out after 20 years.
Oscar, I have to jump in. We have to take a break. And this guy is killing me because it's another year because of COVID that he's still in jail. But nevertheless, we have to. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.